Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hour number three, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Darren McFarlane, Willie Donick with the day off. Marquise Munson back at the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Elliot Friedman coming up at 1 o'clock from SportsCent, our weekly visit with him. But as you know, we've been doing this series on Facebook Live called Game Night, where we talk to some different people in the sports world. Darren is going to talk to Trent Dilfer of Lipscomb Academy coming up tomorrow night at 6. But I had the opportunity a couple of days ago to speak with former Titan safety Michael Griffin, and we got into a lot of different things both on and off the field.
All right, everybody, welcome into another edition of Game Night, ESPN 102.5 The Game, and our Facebook page. It's something we've had a lot of fun with over the last month or so. Chase McCabe here with you, and former Titan safety Michael Griffin is our guest tonight. Michael, how's it going? It's been a while. Good to see you.
That's going great. Can't complain outside of this whole quarantine thing, but, you know, it's everything's starting to ease back up, and you're starting to see people being more out and about than usual as the last 3 months, but it's going real well for me.
Where are you these days? Are you not in Nashville anymore?
No,
are you
in I'm in Austin, Texas right now, back where I'm born and raised. Should be going back to Nashville. Leave my wife book some flights for June 30th or something in there, and we'll spend the 4th down there in Nashville. So
very cool.
Yes, sir.
Has that kind of been in retirement life, you kind of go back and forth?
Yeah, my wife is from Nashville, so right. we go there periodically, or her family comes here, so she's trying to itch me to get back to Nashville and move back there, but right now we're contemplating, bought a couple lots, haven't decided what we're going to do, if we're going to build here or build there, so we're still up in the air right now.
The Titans had like a media availability with some of the defensive coaches, and Mike Vrabel, the head coach, jumped in as a part of it and discuss everything that's been going on and how a lot of the conversations that he's had over the last few days with his players have been about this and hadn't been about football. It's been about just, you know, society and how he can help and everything going on. Rashawn Evans brought that up with us today. So I bring that up to ask you what, you know, if at any point in your career, whether it was back at Texas with Mac Brown or Jeff Fisher here with the Titans or any head coach that you had, what kind of conversations did you all have sometimes that maybe were about this type of situation of racism and just being better humans?
You know what? I don't think it was – you know what? It was funny because me and Big Country, David Stewart, I remember we were both hurt at the same time as last year before he retired. And I remember everybody on, because he never really spoke. He was very quiet, but on the field he was a man amongst boys. We used to laugh at Bernard Pollard because there was a picture of David Stewart holding Bernard Pollard. And we used to laugh and be like, ooh, you're lucky you're on our team now. But I just remember just having a conversation because, you know, and again, it's like I'm here and I'm there. And it was like, you know, he was into like the outdoor life. He was like a hunter. And it was the exact opposite. And I remember we was both hurt. I remember I tore my quad and he had an injury. I can't remember exactly what it was. And we literally just started talking for the first time, just getting to know one another. And it was the first time, I mean, we played on the same team for years. And it was just getting to know who he was as a person, because no one ever knew. Everybody had speculation of who he was. And he was very, you know, him and the offensive line were very close. But outside of that, no one really knew who he was. And I remember us just being in the training room every day rehabbing. And I really got to know him and really got to see who he really was. And I think, again, you know, you judge a book by its cover, and I think that's an example to me of just, you know, when you assume, when you think this is who that person is. I mean, you're on a team of 53 players, and it's hard to get to know everybody. But if you're on the same team for a long period of time, and you become one of the veterans on the team, I almost feel like in order for a team to be that much better, your veteran guys need to know who they are and know how they can trust and know each and every person on their team, that if somebody does have issues, somebody else, this guy over here has dealt with something similar to what you have dealt with. Or maybe this person over here can help you with what you're dealing with, or this person is from there, or he likes this, or and things and that. And I think Brian Arakpo said it the best on Twitter the other day. He said he wished the world can be just like a football locker room, because we all come from different societies and different cultural backgrounds. And we do not see race whatsoever. We see your teammates and your brothers, because we go out there on the field and we sweat and we bleed together. We're tied together. We're picking each other up. You're only as strong as your weakest link. And he just said that he just wished that that's how the real world was in real society. And I used to always say we were trapped in this little bubble, because even when you're in college and even when you're in high school as an athlete, you're pretty much in the same core classes that all your teammates are. So you're kind of just naturally, you know, attracted to people that are like yourself. And you're kind of blinded, as long as you're playing, you're kind of blinded by everything that's going on the outside world, because everything is just so great because you're in this small little bubble. You know, we all got the same problems. You know, you work too much and you got a family at home and you got to make time for the wife and kids. But again, our time going out was, hey, we're going to bring the wives with us to try to close their mouths and make them sound like, hey, remember when I took you out? We all went out and had a great time, but hey, we put the wives over with each other and all us guys start having a great time because we enjoy being around each other. And when you're away from the game of football, that's what you miss the most. It's not being on the field and, you know, the fans screaming and all the stress. It's just being with your teammates. I remember the first year, people asked me, why you didn't call and check on me? Why you didn't talk to me? Whatever. And I just felt like I was bothering y'all. I remember when I played and people text me and whatever, and I just felt like your phone is always buzzing and somebody wants something. So I said, I felt the same way. I didn't want to bother y'all just to say great game or good luck or how's it going or how's the family, congratulations on the little one or whatever it was. So that's what you really miss. But and then you get trying to adjust to the real world and you start seeing the real issues. You start seeing things that go on each and every day. And so again, it's like right now, I think the reason why everybody is so wild and everybody's so, because one, we've been trapped in our house for the last 3 months, and then this happens, and then it's like, it's an uproar, and everybody thought 2020 was supposed to be his best year, but it just seems like this year is just going down, 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 down. No matter what happens, something else is just popping up left and right.
One thing that I, you know, it's going to be weird seeing the Titans without Jarrell Casey. You play with Jarrell for a long time. I mean, he's a staple with the Titans. And I had a conversation with him last year at training camp as things had really started to turn around, and, you know, they were very hyped up for what that season was going to look like. And we all know how it ended. It ended up going to the AFC title game. But he referenced early in his career that, hey, we did a lot of losing. We had a lot of tough times. You won a national championship at Texas. You had a lot of success there. So how important is it for players today that come from programs like that, go to the NFL where you never know what's going to happen, you have a lot of roster turnover, but basically learning how to lose, because that's a part of the game. That's something that I think is hard for people, that you don't always know what that's like. And then when you do get to successes and winning, that makes it that much better.
I don't think you technically learn how to lose. You play this game to win. I know we did lose a lot. I remember we went, 2-14, 3-13. It was tough. I mean, I just remember just being in that locker room and, you know, it was like, I literally counted on my finger one time, like how many quarterbacks that we had that started. And I was just like, this is crazy. I remember all the defensive coordinators, all the defense. We had a high – the Titans was a turnover. It was a high turnover. I mean, I played for, three head coaches or four head coaches, at least three first-round quarterbacks, but not to mention some of the veteran quarterbacks that we brought in. At the safety position, I remember at one point, like, every week it was like Russian roulette, like, what other safety was going to start alongside of me? trying to find that next middle linebacker. When Keith Bullock left to captain the defense, it was like trying to find Steven Tulloch did a great job, but then he left. And then at the cornerback position, Courtland left, and we still had Jason McCord, and Byrne was there, and then Altamont Burner left. It was just like a revolving door on everything. It was like nothing was like a staple. And again, it starts from, you know, you say it starts from the top of the organization. And the one thing I see right now, the organization is going, you know, you got Amy in there. She's doing a great job. Great job. The city loves her. I love her. She's been fantastic. Then you hired a you know, our general manager. You know, I was through three GMs. The third one finally got me. So John Robinson let me go. I think that was his first active duty he did, and I told him he might have did the best. That might have been the best thing he's ever done. I told him this straight to his face. That might have been the best thing he ever done, because you got Kevin Byard. That was impressive. Yeah. I don't know if that was a lucky shot or you should go to Vegas or what, because you released me and literally you went in the draft and drafted a guy from right down the street, literally, that did not go to the combine, but had every accolade. I mean, 19 interceptions in college is like unbelievable. I don't care what.
Yeah.
I don't care where you play at. 19 is unbelievable, especially from the safety position. It's unbelievable. So, and right now, I mean, I think he's already, after year four, he's already past 19. So he let you know that he could do it in 4 years. And I can just imagine another 4 years what he could do. So he's barely scratching the surface. The game is starting to slow down a lot for him. And he's definitely, ball magnet for sure. Ball magnet. Yeah. And let him blitz and start to let him play down line of scrimmage. He makes a lot of big plays. He comes up big when you need him. So that's great. But again, learn how to lose is hard. But I mean, when it starts from the top, when you get a strong foundation like Amy, then you follow with a GM, then a head coach. And from there, you just saw that it just trickled on down. That way, when the players can trust the coaches and know that they know what they're doing and putting them in the right positions, that definitely strengthens that team. And then, you know, instead of hiring another offensive coordinator from outside, you let Arthur get his shot. And I know everybody had a question mark on him earlier, but I mean, I was there. Arthur, people don't understand, Arthur was on the I met Arthur when he was like I forgot what he was, but during my visit during the draft process, I remember going to Washington Redskins, and he was there, drove me around, we spoke, and then I remember he came up with Jerry Gray, and I remember he used to know everything, and he was on the defense side of the ball. Then he went to the offensive side of the ball, became a tight ends coach, and that's all she wrote. He's been around, and he knows, you know, he knows his players, and I think that was just a great opportunity for him. You know, he knew everybody on the offensive side of the ball, knew what he could do.
Yeah.
He knows the defense, he knows offense. He did a great, tremendous job. I know people were kind of like, let's try to put him on the cutting block earlier in the season. But again, I like the fact that they stuck with him. And that's the one thing. When you have a strong foundation, the coaches trust one another, that's all that matters. Stop listening to the outside eye and listen to everybody. That's within, and that's what they did the last 2 years or 3 years, and that's why they've been doing so well.
What kind of relationship did you have with Vrabel? Just playing against him, or did you know him at all?
I played against Vrabel, but that was it. Played against him. That was really about it. Nothing outside of that. I just played against him. Remember, I played against him with Kansas City. So,
yeah.
Thank you.
Say what?
Thank you for telling me my age.
Oh, sorry. Sorry about that. One thing that comes up though about him, and when I talk to players, is just that he still got that player mentality, because he's. Really, he hadn't been retired all that long, and he likes to show that.
He, you know what? I remember being there and just listening in, like, his coaches' meetings when I did my intern, and you would see that he still has the player mentality, and it's just like it's funny, because some things that come out of his mouth when he's talking to like coaches and players, and you're like, okay. Like, I just retired. Do I need to be like coach and like not laugh and bite my tongue, or do I just laugh? Because it's almost like being in the locker room when you're talking to him. So he's a great guy, though. I mean, one thing that you know is he's going to tell you how to do it. If you can't do it, then he's going to show you how to do it. And that's the most amazing thing is because it's like when you look at him, you're like, I don't think you want him to show you how to do it because he can still do it if you realize he played on defense and he played on offense. So if he needs to show you how to block, he needs to show you how to rush the passer, drop back in coverage, he can do it all. So that's the one. That's the thing that you like about him because he can definitely give you examples. He's definitely hands-on. He's very honest. And that's all you can ask from a coach is as an honest person that is hands-on, that you know. And you respect him more because you're like, when he tells you to do something and you know that he's done it before, you're like, okay, it makes sense because I know you've done it before. And compared to somebody who's never done it, sometimes you kind of question them, like, why can't I do it this way? Instead of just reading the book and saying, do the X's and O's, but show me how to do it. And that's the one thing he can't do.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing last week, Taylor Lewan, I know you played with his rookie year and I think a couple of years you guys played together. And he has obviously evolved and changed and grown up. But one thing that came up with him is that he wants to be more of a leader with this team and something that, you know, we've talked about. Jarrell Casey's gone. Wesley Woodyard's gone. I mean, there's been a lot of those, Delanie Walker, that have been in that locker room that have been leaders that have now left. And it's time for the next wave. You brought up Kevin Byard. He's by far one of those guys. But when you look at Taylor Lewan, what are some things that you see from him that tell you, hey, that's a guy that can command a locker room and be a leader?
You know, Taylor's different because he's very outspoken. I know everybody loves him. And, you know, he plays with a mean streak and probably one of the most athletic guys that I've ever seen when it comes to a guy his stature. I would say, though, for him to become that guy, he has to walk the walk. And what I mean by walk that walk is, you know, we all seen it, and nobody's perfect. And, again, I would love to play with Taylor any given day of the week because he's that guy that's going to give it all he got when he's on the field. But it's just walking that walk every day. Sometimes it's better to be seen than to be heard. A guy like Mike Roos, who's a team captain, that played along, had a great career with the Tennessee Titans, Pro Bowl, All-Pro, everything else, very quiet. No one ever heard anything from him. But you knew he was going to do everything the right way. And I guess what I mean, sometimes it's better to be – to be seen and to be heard. And you see guys like, you know, Kevin Mawai was there, Hall of Famer. Talked a lot, but again, he backed it up. You know, right. So it's if that's the role that you want and that's the role that you're aiming for, it's you gotta walk the walk. That means you have to do everything. If you hurt, you gotta find a way to play through it. You gotta be that guy that they can count on no matter what. And that's what gains everybody trust. That's what gets everybody to start saying, hey, I wanna be like that guy. And do I think he can do it? No question. I think he can. He was young and I think now he's getting older, he's mature, and it kind of that position falls on you because when you're the highest paid offensive tackle in the league, that's right. Pretty much what if you're the highest paid running back, highest paid quarterback, highest paid safety, you got to take ownership of that. Because no matter what, whether it's your teammates, everybody around the league is looking at you. The media and everybody wants to talk to you. Every player coming into the league at that position want to be you. So you automatically, you got to accept that and embrace it. And you got to walk that walk. And you got to prove and show each and every week.
How difficult is it, though, as a player of, you know, I mean, you put your bodies on the line each and every play, and so you make a good chunk of change. I mean, you make a good living. I mean, that's a part of playing the game. And obviously, Derrick Henry, somebody that's talked about right now, he's on the franchise tag, hopes to get a long-term deal. But with that position, and you know in this league how tough it is on running backs, like, what do you think the conversations are like for him as he tries to contemplate, okay, I got this 1 year deal right now, but you know, I want to get what I can get out of my next contract. So what do you think is going through his mind?
I don't know because again, it's and I hate to say it because he plays one of the positions, and again, we know that the team rode him throughout the entire season. You know, he they wrote him, and he did a great job, fantastic job. You always question how much more does he really got in the tank. No, that's only for God to know, especially with the running style that he does run with. I think what hurts him is when you see guys that got paid before him, when you see the Ezekiel Elliotts, when you see from the Rams, just went to
– Gurley.
Gurley, there you go. Yeah. When you see Gurley, when you see Le'Veon Bell, these three guys were like all pros, and then all of a sudden they got paid, and then you're like, what happened? Gurley's hobbled with injuries. Zeke, you know, he fought the whole offseason about getting a deal. Did he train the way he needed to train? We all know he was having a great vacation, but was he training the way he was supposed to? Le'Veon Bell sat out an entire year, and, you know, did that hurt him? You know, was he not the same player? Was he surrounded by great players with Big Ben and Antonio Brown and Smith-Schuster? And was he surrounded by all these great guys around him that allowed him that when you're worried about a guy that can, you know, any given time can take the ball, you know, 100 yards on the outside like Antonio Brown, does that loosen up that front set, that front seven, or load the box with eight or whatever, because you know you got to worry about that guy? So, I think that's what hurts him, because you always think about that in the back of your mind when it comes to that position. But do I think Derrick Henry is that type of player? I don't think so. I mean, I've been watching him all offseason through social media, and he's a workhorse. I remember watching him when he went back to school at Alabama. I mean, he's working late at night. And then I remember when I was interning, this dude stayed in the weight room constantly. I think that's just his mindset. I think he's just a guy that wants to be the best that ever played his position. So would I trust him more? I think I would trust him more, because he's not very vocal and outspoken about this contract situation. He's very quiet about it, and he's just going about his business. Even with this whole COVID-19 thing, I'm 99.9% sure that he did not miss a day in that weight room.
Well, hey, Michael, it's been fun catching up with you and just talking about old times. Appreciate you taking the time tonight to come on with us. And best of luck. Safe travels when you do come to Nashville. And Gigi's Cupcakes, hope that continues to go well, and the kids. But good to see you.
Hey, good seeing you. Thank y'all very much, and appreciate you having me on.
Hey, if you own or manage a small business, you're open, you want to let people know about it? Well, we've got Free Business Friday, as we said here on this Thursday. And it's an opportunity tomorrow where we're going to offer you free advertising to any local business that it's safely open and working. That's a no-cost, no-catch offer to you. All you have to do is go to the website, GameNashville.com/FBF. GameNashville.com/FBF for more information. Free Business Friday is our way of supporting small businesses as we get through this together. It has been a huge hit on this radio station on Fridays, and I hope a lot of you continue to get involved. We do appreciate your business. In just a moment, hopefully we will have President and CEO of Dover International Speedway on the line with us, and we'll talk about the announcement that was made yesterday. So we're in a little bit of a stall. Actually, he should join us in the next minute or two, and we'll talk to Mike Titoyan, who, as I said, is the president and CEO of Dover International Speedway. Good stuff from Michael Griffin. Always good to hear from Griff with your game night conversation with him. And thought several things stood out. I thought it was interesting to hear him talk about Mike Vrabel as a head coach. It was interesting to hear him talk about Derrick Henry's work ethic. It was interesting for him to talk about leadership and Taylor Lewan. And quite honestly, I felt pretty good about the comments we've made in the past about Taylor Lewan, because I feel like we've hit the mark, because Michael Griffin is a player, okay? He's a longtime player, and he understands that dynamic. And I think he was kind of saying what we've been saying.
Yeah, I definitely thought that when I was having the conversation with him of, and you know, he respected the fact that when he was there, it was the early part of Taylor Lewan's career, and that he has matured and grown up. But I thought he said it best: walk the walk, got to walk the walk, practice what you preach. So that's a great message from Michael Griffin.
No doubt, good stuff from him. I will have a game night tomorrow evening with Lipscomb Academy head coach, former Super Bowl champ of the Baltimore Ravens, and Nashvillian Trent Dilfer. So Trent Dilfer will join me tomorrow night at 6 o'clock on our game night Facebook Live. That is going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that tomorrow. Also, I'm looking forward to somewhere in a year from now. Don't know the date, but sometime, you know, around a year from now, Chase, where we'll be talking about a cup race. First time in, at the time, it'll be 37 years in Nashville that NASCAR is at a cup race in Nashville. 1984 is when the cup race left our fine city. And online with us right now is Mike Titoyan. He is the president and CEO of Dover International Speedway. And we know that's who owns the Nashville Super Speedway. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's awesome. Thank you for having me on. It's great to join you guys and your listeners.
Well, as you can imagine, Mike, we have been very excited in this market for the last 24 hours because while there's been a lot of talk of possibly a return of NASCAR to Nashville, it's been more centered around the fairgrounds location. And for this news to come out, I mean, we didn't even really consider the Nashville Super Speedway. So, one, didn't think announcement was coming that quickly. And two, we definitely weren't talking about the location. How did all this happen?
Yeah, no, great. Well, little history, I guess, just to bring everybody up to speed. We actually built Nashville Super Speedway back about 20 years ago, and we built it to be cup ready in anticipation of someday we would be hosting the Cup Series there. Now, we didn't realize that we were going to be on a 20 or 21-year business plan. We certainly had hoped to bring a cup race sooner than that, but as a result of the economy and just the economics of what we're going through at the Speedway, we shuttered the operations down in 2011. And then fast forward all the way to December, this past December, when we were in your fine city, we held the Champions Week in Nashville. And it was an amazing experience for our entire industry to be in the city, and the industry was embraced as I think we all had hoped and expected we would be. But it was very rarely in our industry can we get everybody to agree on anything. But that particular week in Nashville, everybody had an amazing time. And so that's when NASCAR, the leadership, had approached us about the possibility if we would consider moving one of our Dover races to, because right now we have two. We have a spring and a fall race in Dover. If we would consider moving one of our races to Nashville. And we have had a great relationship. We've been in the sport for over 50 years. So they know us well. We know them very well. And at that point, it was really just a terrific collaboration at their request. And as you guys know, change was needed or is needed on the NASCAR schedule. We've heard from fans, certainly our broadcast partners, that a more dynamic schedule change was needed. And Nashville, of all the things that we talked about in NASCAR's priorities as to what they need to accomplish, Nashville was their number one priority. As a result of us having a facility that is not quite cup ready because it's been sitting dormant for the last 10 years. The best way to get there is for us to move one of our races to Nashville. And as you were just saying, in a year or so, we're going to be rocking and rolling out at Nashville Super Speedway. So we are super excited to be coming back and being reunited with your city.
Well, you said a lot of truths there for sure. One, and no matter what the subject matter is, you're right. It's damn near impossible to get anybody and everybody on the same page, no matter what you're talking about. Right. And two, right. It was very clear to us, Mike, because we did our show, I think it was on a Wednesday, there at the Music City Center around that awards banquet. And we had drivers, you know, come through there, sit down at the table with us, Mike Helton came over and sat down at the tables. I mean, we talked to the who's who, anybody and everybody in the sport for basically 4 hours on our show that day, and it was abundantly clear that Nashville was a high, high priority for NASCAR.
Yeah, and you certainly were talking to the right guys, and Mike Helton, Steve Phelps, the president, Steve O'Donnell, who's the chief racing development officer for the sport, and Ben Kennedy. Those are the guys that we had the primary conversations with, and they're just terrific guys. And you found that out when you were able to spend some time with them, along with the drivers. And it's just such a great marriage, our sport and your community. And we saw that 20 some odd years ago, and we spent actually back then a little over $100 million building that facility. And I don't know what that equates to in current dollars, but it was a significant investment at the time. And like I said, Harvard's probably not going to use our 21-year business plan as something someone should follow, but we find ourselves in the situation that we're in, and it punctuated what I think everybody has felt for such a long time, that Nashville is absolutely the right place to be, and so we're looking forward to it.
Mike Titoyan on the line with us, president and CEO of Dover International Speedway. Dover owns the Nashville Super Speedway. And, Mike, you're talking to somebody that was out there for every race for a decade. And I was doing a pre-race, a 2-3-hour pre-race show before every – whether it was open wheel, it didn't matter what it was, what the event. I was out there. And to be quite honest, if we could backtrack a little bit – so I know the lay of the land, and I know – the history out there, it was, I would say, 4 years ago, I guess. I remember us having the president and CEO of another company, I can't even think of the name of the company, on the show to say that they were buying, you know, that piece of land. And, of course, it never happened. And that story just kind of went dormant for a long time. And to be perfectly honest, full disclosure, I wasn't even sure you guys still owned the place when the news came out. What happened with that possible sale, if you don't mind?
Yeah, no, sure. Well, we closed down. It was July of 2011 is when we had held our last race there. And whether it was fortuitous or not, we felt at that time that we just weren't going to get the opportunity to bring a cup race to Nashville. And so we had partnered with a development group, and we owned 1,400 acres. It's a great property, as you now know, or as you know. We've sold about 300 acres to a great partner of ours, but which will not have any impact on what we're doing operationally with hosting a Cup Series race. And about 4 years ago, there was an offer that was made to purchase, and we're not, on full disclosure, we're not exactly sure what they were planning on doing with the property, other than we had negotiated a price at that time to sell the property to them. That fell through. It was an interesting, or kind of a strange ending or transaction, or I guess a non-transaction. And at the same time, we always wanted to preserve the track and the property around the track, because it was kind of like you just never know what may happen in the future. And so that fell away by the wayside. We still obviously own the property. And this opportunity came up back in December at NASCAR's request. And so we call it good fortune or fortuitous or lucky or good guessing. We certainly have enough property to put on an amazing race weekend, which these days, as you guys know, being as close as you are in sports, sports in general has changed in the sense that the fans have become more discerning with what else. Let me take a step back. The basic premise of our sport is NASCAR, our sanctioning body, is responsible for the product that goes on the track. And while you guys and me and our fans have our own opinion about it, they are the subject matter experts. Everything else surrounding the track is our responsibility. So the entertainment that we provide off the track is critically important to us and our fans as it is the entertainment that they see on the track. And so it's akin to your Nashville Sounds. The Texas Rangers, I think it's a Texas Rangers affiliate. Mm-hmm. They're responsible for the players, the field manager, everything that happens in between the white lines. That's their responsibility. The Nashville Sound staff, the reason why it's so fun to go to a game, unfortunately not yet this year, but it is all the entertainment surrounding it. And together, it creates an amazing memory for families and fans to attend, and that's what we need to recreate at the Super Speedway.
When we first heard the news, we were excited, and we thought, is this a one-off? Is this a one-year deal, a one-off deal? And then we would later learn that it's a four-year deal. How did you come to that? What ultimately is your goal? Is it to be here long-term again, Mike? Is it a let's reassess after maybe year three? What's kind of your game plan coming back into this in Nashville?
Yeah, so it's a four-year the document that tracks and the NASCAR, the sanctioning body, signs, it's something called the sanction agreement. And that sanction agreement is really the legal document, if you will, that marries you to each other. And so we're a publicly traded company. So it was important for us, and obviously any of our shareholders, to make sure that if we're going to go into give up a race in Dover, a profitable race in Dover, and we're going to move a race to Nashville and make the kind of investment in time, in energy, and human capital, and real money, we needed some assurance from our partners, NASCAR, that we were going to be able to get a return on that investment with that agreement. And that's really why it's a four-year agreement, the assurance that we will be there for 4 years. However, our plan, and by the way, moving forward, those sanction agreements in the past have typically been 1 year sanction agreements. And so as we move forward, we just needed that insurance. Otherwise, as smart as we think we were of holding on the property, we'd be complete idiots if we did what we're about to do with only the assurance of 1 year for a cup race. Our plan is to be there for a long, long time. 4 years was just something that our partners at NASCAR was we were really pleased and happy that they were to do something that they otherwise wouldn't have done, but they understood our situation. But our plan is to reinvest in the property and be there for a long period of time. And so while the sanction agreement is 4 years, our plan is certainly to be there much longer than that.
Mike Detoyan is with us, the president and CEO of Dover International Speedway, the owners of the Nashville Super Speedway. So we know that with it sitting there, as you brought up, that there are going to have to be some things done to the facility. When do you think that process will begin, and what all needs to be done, or do you even have those answers yet?
Yeah, well, we have 378 days about to make sure whatever needs to be done better be done. Otherwise, it'll be the last time you'll ever talk to me in your life, because I'll be doing something else. So to that end, we actually are going to pile a bunch of people and get to the Super Speedway the week of the 15th of this month. Obviously, we have assessed the situation earlier than this in anticipation of the announcement that we made yesterday. But we have to get started now. The good news is when it was built, we were anticipating that someday we would host a cup race. So we built it, as you know, because you've been there, that, you know, it's not ready for prime time right now. There are some things that, look, it's like going to an old house. And, you know, once you start flushing the toilets and turning on the lights and seeing if the AC works, that's kind of what we need to be doing now. And there are some things to the track that we got to make sure is a safe environment with safer barrier to make sure that our competitors are safe when they compete. And so, and you know what, think about any stadium, think about the arena that you guys go to, think about the football stadium. So much has changed from the fans' enjoyment or comforts or expectations. Then, think of anything from 10 years ago in sports. It's just not the same venue. It's not the same experience. It can't be. And so those are the things, you know, you expect your Wi-Fi to work when you go to a sporting event, right? A fan expects that. And that has just become a typical fan amenity. And so those are the things that we need to look for as well, that just television networks, the way the TV compounds. So a lot of the technology has changed. And so those are the things that we're really going to be paying attention to. And we believe that all hands on deck. We certainly will be ready when the green flag drops.
We know this is going to be the Cup Series, but typically we see race weekends. So is it safe to say the Xfinity Series and maybe the Truck Series will be a part of this race weekend?
Yeah, we certainly hope so. You know, typically we would have seen the NASCAR schedule, the following year's schedule typically would come out in April. But because of the awful pandemic that we're all suffering from, that has just been delayed. And as you guys know, we're, as a sport, just trying to make the best of what we have available to us to get, as you guys know, we got cars back on the track a few weeks ago, to get our sport cranking again. And so there's just been a delay from a scheduling perspective, and that's why our Nashville date is just extremely tentative, because our television, our broadcast partners, the industry has just been so preoccupied with the challenges that everyone is faced with, not just in sports, but just everyone is faced with. We likely won't get confirmation on Truck and Xfinity and our confirmed dates, you know, for another, gosh, I'd be guessing, but another couple of months or so. But we, to your point, we would love to have, right now in Dover, we do run a triple header where we run Trucks on Friday, Xfinity on Saturday, and Cup Series on Sunday. We'd love to replicate that in Nashville if we're given the opportunity, and I think we will be.
Mike, as you mentioned earlier, a lot of things have changed in the last 10 years since racing was out there, and that includes the racing itself. We've seen NASCAR, you mentioned Steve O'Donnell, put an emphasis on the product on the track, making the cars not only safer but more competitive. There's been the introduction of the PJ1 traction compound that helps a lot.
Yep.
With the side-by-side racing, and NASCAR is getting a lot of new fans. That's what they want to see. They want to see passing. They want to see side-by-side racing. So I bring that up to address the track itself, and maybe some, you know, are there going to be changes to the actual racing surface or the track itself to help with that, and how the racing has changed over the years?
Yeah, that's an excellent observation. We have, it's a concrete track, which is a rarity. It will be the largest concrete track on the circuit next year. And we certainly rely on the NASCAR executives and their engineering teams to put on the best show that they can. And you'd mentioned PJ1, which, for the benefit of your listeners, is just like kind of sticky stuff that you would put on your track. And so those are the things. Not next year, but the year after, there will be a new car, new generation car coming out. And so I think it's interesting in our sport where you go from track to track. It is literally science as to how you approach the track that you're going to, and how do the teams set up for it to be as competitive, but also exciting, as you said, side-by-side racing, a lot of passing, a lot of action on the track. And so racing at Nashville Super Speedway is much different than racing at Bristol, or is much different than racing at Talladega, which I think is kind of fun for our fans or new fans that are coming to the sport, that there's the way the cars are set up. It really is a lot of science that's put into it, more than just a bunch of cars turning left and going fast. And so we do rely. Look, I'm the last guy to talk to about the technical aspects of motorsports. I came up as a promoter. I came up through minor league baseball, and so I lived that life for a long time where you don't rely on necessarily the athletes or the play. It's all about the promotional part of it. And so we rely on the NASCAR guys to put on the best product possible. And this is a really important market for us. We want to perform both on and off the track. So I know that when we get to Nashville next year, NASCAR is going to put on the absolute best product they can to create the kind of excitement that I think our fans expect and should expect.
Mike, as we wrap this up, I think the statute of limitations may be up, so it's time for me to come clean with Dover International. Probably 08, we were doing a radio show out there at the Nashville Super Speedway, And when the show wrapped up, no one was around, and I mean no one. I think we were the only people at the track. And I may or may not have, well, if I'm telling you, I may have taken my car around the track for a couple of laps. So it's time for me just to get that burden off of me. I think enough time has passed, but I'm coming clean with you, and I hope it doesn't affect our relationship moving forward.
So you're the guy who did that. We've been looking for you.
Well, I just thought I'll never get this chance again, and I'm going to do it, and I did it.
No, you know what? You know what? Here's my promise to you. You'll get another chance. I promise.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Once we get the thing ready to go, we're going to give you a golf cart, and you're going to go crazy.
I like it. Hey, really appreciate the visit. We are really, really excited here in this market. This has been great news for the last 24 hours. Thanks for doing this, and we look forward to meeting you in person sooner rather than later. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate it. I look forward to being on with you guys again, and just look forward to being in your city for a long time to come. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. That is Mike Tutoyan, who is the president and CEO of Dover International Speedway. And as you heard us talk a lot about yesterday, indeed, NASCAR is returning to our market, and it's going to be a cup race. And that'll be, when it happens, the first time in 37 years, and it's going to be out at the Nashville Super Speedway, which Dover owns. I hope you enjoyed that interview. A lot of good information came out of there. Chase, what did he say? 300 and I meant to write it down.
378.
Okay, thank you. I thought it was 378. So let's just mark that right now. 378 days. He said we've got about somewhere between 378 days to figure this out. So from today's date, 378 days. What is this going to be, like a late June, early July race?
Which is the date that we've heard. We've heard June 20th. So
late
that's
June.
That's right in that ballpark.
That's somewhere. That's right around there, right?
Yep.
I think it's. We're thinking late June.
I think that's perfect.
I'm okay
with
that.
Summer race here. Now, me personally, I'd love for it to be a night race. That's just me. I love night racing, but if it's not, then you know, certainly would take the Sunday afternoon race, which is probably what it's going to end up being. But I think that works. That's the perfect time for it.
And I'm going to take him up on him saying I can do it again.
Oh, me too.
I there's no way I'm letting Mike Tutoyan off the hook. And he's the man that can make it happen. I mean, he's the president and CEO of Dover. So if he said I can do it, then I feel like I have the green light to do it again.
I think you will.
Although he said a golf cart. I don't want to take a golf cart.
I want a race car.
I
need to take that video of iRacing down so they don't see that.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to get a car if they see your iRacing ability.
Hey, I got a
which you have tweeted practice. Out for people to see, by the way.
I have. I did that during a break just so you could see.
Yeah, my guess is our bosses are probably going to ask you to take the game logo off the car because it's a bad look for the radio station. It really is. You're out on the track just riding around by yourself. It's essentially a ride-along with nobody, and you're still wrecking. So that they may ask you to take the game logo off the car.
Yeah, I might have to do that. No sponsorship for me.
No sponsorship for now. Maybe it's something you have to earn.
I'll put a tiger on there. Or my face.
Put the Braves.
No, they wouldn't. They don't want to be associated with me either.
You know,
but yeah,
I just,
that was a really good conversation though, and answered some questions. You know, I think about the racing surface and the facility itself, what the weekend could look like. I mean, and how it all came to be, because as we have said, this just came out of nowhere. It came out of left field, and it's good for our city. And I still echo to people, this doesn't mean the fairgrounds are dead, because the general consensus is NASCAR is not
play
saying,
our cards right.
Yeah.
We may have two cup races in this market,
which would be it may have happened in the past of somewhere, but at least for now, I mean, that would be the first time that one market can say they have two races at two different tracks in the cup series owned by two different companies. So I know the best example I have is the Indy Motor Speedway had the cup race, and Nationwide and our Xfinity and trucks raced out at IRP, Indianapolis Raceway Park, but this would be cup. So, and somebody threw out there, run Xfinity and trucks at the fairgrounds and cup at the Super Speedway. Nah, come on.
Nah.
Come on. We can do better than that.
Think big.
Just get both.
Get greedy, think big. Nothing wrong with that.
I read an article, too, that Nashville or NASCAR had a list of cities that they identified that they wanted to be in. Nashville was number one. No surprise.
Imagine that. Well, you just heard that in that interview. I feel like we've been breaking news all week, and I felt like there's no doubt that was a subtle breaking of news from the president and CEO of Dover. I mean, he just randomly threw out 378 days.
Yeah.
I mean, let's go do the math on the calendar. So that would be 13 more days from today. So that would be June 17th of next year.
Yeah, which that would – so if you're thinking in terms of that, so June 17th, as I pull my calendar up, is a – that is a Thursday, so theoretically could do the midweek thing, but June 20th is the date that's been thrown out there.
Well, whatever what would it be on a Thursday? Huh? Well, yeah, but everything would start on like a Thursday, right?
Well, yeah, that's when you'd unload. If you're doing the whole weekend.
Well, I'm saying if you're doing the whole weekend, so that would line up, right?
Yeah, now things could, you know, and things could change. We're determining that these one-day shows are actually working, so... But, yeah, somewhere around that. And if you ran the trucks, you'd probably do that Friday, do the Xfinity on Saturday, Cup on Sunday, and they do have lights. So you could do some night races there. So, but, yeah, so that would fit into the date that's been floating out there of it being June 20th.
And I felt the need just to come clean. I feel better. I really do. I feel like a big burden has been lifted.
I'm glad you feel better. I'm proud of you.
I just wanted to come clean, you know, and just be done with it, carrying that around. It's over. That's good. And he was fine with it. You know, I was ready to face whatever consequences would come from it. And he doubled down and said, okay, you can do it again.
Yeah, I was hoping he wasn't going to be like, yeah, you're not coming in our facility.
you've been blackmarked, okay? We've just crossed you right off the list.
Yeah, you're out.
Speaking of breaking news, our next guest, it looks like, has broken a little hockey news. So how about we start the fourth and final hour with Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet, and let's get into some new hockey news that's out there that he has just tweeted out about. We'll do that on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN, 102.5, The Game.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.